You are listening to the PW Torch live cast. It is Monday night, 7-11, July 11th, 2016, here on the Raw postgame show. And I'm your host, Torch Assistant Editor James Caldwell, taking your calls and emails here at pwtorchlivecast.com. pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com is our email. Our phone number is 646-721-9828. And we've got a lot to discuss on tonight's Raw. Full coverage of Raw at our main website, pwtorch.com. We got all the news on the show, plus my full report and thoughts at pwtorch.com, pwtorchvip.com. If you're one of our VIP members, we appreciate your business. We're at pwtorchvip.com. Or if you're not a VIP member, pwtorch.com/govip is how you find out how to subscribe and become part of the VIP family. And joining me on tonight's post-game show, a near-historic Raw, because it's the next-to-last Raw before the brand split. So it's kind of important, and therefore they brought back Vince McMahon, and they closed the show with McMahon and Stephanie and Shane, and the resolution was Shane's running SmackDown and Stephanie's running Raw, which is kind of what I thought they were doing. But any event, to help me discuss what the heck happened here at the end of the show, PW Torch columnist Greg Parks. Greg, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, James. I can help you discuss what happened at the end of the show. Just don't ask me to try and make sense of it.
So I'm getting ready for the show, and I recapped to my wife what happened in the show, and she said, "Isn't that what they already were doing?" And I'm like, "Yes, that pretty much sums up my Raw report." Is what was the point of tonight's show, Greg? I don't understand what the point of the show was tonight. Help me out.
The point of the show was it was a Monday night between the hours of 8 and 11 o'clock, and contractually WWE is obligated to put on a television product called Monday Night Raw for the USA Network, and that's what they did.
That pretty much sums it up. There was 3 hours of programming. WWE is desperately waiting for the brand split to happen so they can move on. Yeah, I mean, they've stretched this thing out for 2 months, and it just seems like, Greg, tonight's show confirmed they had no plan for the two-month period of announcing the brand split and actually executing. It sounds like a bad Seinfeld gag of actually executing a game plan to lead into the brand split, and maybe next week it'll all make so much sense the day before the draft and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, well, we're back to square one on this thing. I don't know what the point of any of this was. And, it's...
They know how to take the reservation. They don't know how to hold the reservation.
Thank you for finishing the gag. That's what I count you for, Greg. That's why you're here.
There you go. Yeah.
But, so you end up with a situation where Stephanie has gone back heel, officially, to where she was before. And she's going to run Raw. And Mike McMahon, who covers TNA Impact for us at pwtorch.com, we had a quick conversation on Twitter about this, and he made a comment and made me think about it. It really crystallized what my thought was, which is they're trying to kind of handicap the field a little bit to me, Greg, in the sense that they're putting the evil heel GM or commissioner or whatever they're called, these people, on Raw, and they're putting the nice guy, Shane McMahon, on SmackDown, almost to kind of even the field a little bit, because, you know, SmackDown is such a far distance to cover to get anywhere near to Raw in terms of, as McMahon qualified, ratings and merchandising and, you know, just all these. If you were to break it out by show, you know, Raw being the A show and SmackDown being the B show, house show tours, merchandise, all that kind of stuff. I mean, they're so far behind the A show stuff. So it feels like to me they're trying to even this to start with, and I wonder how much Raw is going to suffer because the presentation is here's mean old Stephanie McMahon running the top show. Oh, or you can just go watch the nice guy show over here on Tuesday night. And I don't know how productive this is going to be, but do you get the same sense I got, Greg, that they did that Shane running SmackDown, Stephanie running Raw to kind of even the field of here's the mean person on Raw, and here's the nice person on SmackDown?
I think that was probably the intent. You know, you look at what little the WWE has announced as far as the roster split and everything that's going to go into it. They've announced, they've all but announced pay-per-views separate or WWE Network specials will be brand exclusive. They'll have different touring brands, a SmackDown brand and a Raw brand. These were all pitfalls of the first brand extension. These were all things that didn't work the first time around. And to see WWE repeating those same mistakes, it makes people roll their eyes. However, the one difference so far, and it's early in the process, we don't have separate rosters yet. We don't even know how the draft is going to take place, what the rules are or anything like that. So we're still relatively early in the roster split. But the one thing that they have done differently than the first time they split the brands is really attempting to make SmackDown feel like it's on equal footing with Raw. There was never a real sense the first time around that SmackDown was on equal footing with Raw. You know, it was still a taped show then. The star power wasn't what it was on Raw. And it showed. It showed in the ratings. It showed in the house show attendance, for which Raw far outpaced SmackDown. And it showed in the pay-per-view buy rates for the SmackDown exclusive shows, which were terrible. Okay? So now that SmackDown's going live on Tuesday nights, that's putting them more on equal footing just with that, with Raw. But now you had the competition. Stephanie and Shane both wanted to run SmackDown. That was the big push. And eventually Shane was presented the opportunity to run SmackDown, and then Vince followed that up by saying, well, he's removed from Raw and just Stephanie is going to run Raw. And I say just because, but they are going to have underlings to actually run the quote unquote day to day operations of these brands, which is just what we needed. But and then having the draft on SmackDown and not on Raw is another huge coup for the SmackDown brand. So they've done more already in a few weeks to attempt to put SmackDown on an even playing field with Raw than they ever did in several years of the original brand split.
And you're right. You saw they split up. You know, night one of the draft is on Raw, and then we're going to draft the mid card on SmackDown the next night. You know, they're doing the full draft on SmackDown in 8 days or whatever. Yeah, I guess 8 days. And what's interesting is it's going to be, you know, Stephanie said that she's going to bury SmackDown and Shane and all that kind of stuff. So I wonder if the draft, you know, because especially when you have a heel drafting, you would think a heel would only draft heels, right? So I guess how they're going to have Stephanie or perhaps Triple H, who they teased, coming back into the picture here. Whoever is running and drafting, whoever this thing works out as far as who picks who makes the picks, you could almost see a situation where Stephanie tries to outpick her brother. You know, by and that'd be like picking. You know, that would be her justification for picking baby faces. Is you know she knows that Shane wants to have pick a baby face. Dean Ambrose on SmackDown, so she's gonna pick Dean Ambrose just to spite her brother. So I can see them kind of setting up the justification for the heel picking baby faces is her just wanting to spite Shane, and that's how baby faces will end up on Raw, and how heels will end up on SmackDown. And Shane's like, oh well, I'm above that. I'll pick a heel, and that kind of thing. And so I wonder if that's how they'll kind of get it a little bit even, where it's not all heels on Raw and all faces on SmackDown. Then you've got a kind of a weird dynamic. But what did you make of that Triple H teaser at the end? You know, where Shane says "Game on," and Stephanie says, "The only game in this business is I'm married to him." And we haven't had anything about Hunter really since, a little bit after WrestleMania. There's a little bit of Hunter discussion, but now, obviously, he's back in the mix. Do you see him as the person running the day-to-day operations of Raw under Stephanie? How do you think this is going to work out with Hunter, do you think, Greg?
What I think is the more intriguing option is Shane tabs Hunter to run SmackDown in opposition of his wife. The vision put forth by storyline Shane McMahon matches the vision that real life Triple H has. So to me, that would be if they wanted to meld those two, that would make more sense. And, the talk has long been and just a supposition and speculation to this point of SmackDown having some tie-in with NXT,
Right.
whatever that may be. So to that end, if you wanted to do any sort of deal with NXT, Triple H would make sense to run SmackDown as well. So it kind of works for me on a couple levels, and just I think the intrigue of Shane right off the bat putting one over on his sister and one-upping her by getting Triple H to run SmackDown. Now, you could ask why would Triple H agree to run against his wife? That's a good question, and that would have to be fleshed out too. But I think that would add a lot more intrigue to the idea of four people in charge that we're going to have than what they could do and just have, four random people with no association, I guess, running things.
I kept waiting for the Eric Bischoff appearance, like, it was set up for some big, it was the way they set it up tonight. This was the main event segment of the show. They set it up for something big, and you're like, this is it? We're just back to where we were, and I'm almost waiting for Bischoff to come out, or even Hunter to come out, at the very end of the show. But the lasting image is Shane, is Stephanie tripping over the ring steps and Shane doing a victory lap. It was just sort of a odd way to end the show, but I was expecting some big thing, and
Well, see, you got to think about it from a McMahon point of view. McMahon's
Trump everywhere.
officially being announced to run on SmackDown is a big deal.
Yeah,
From
it's the
their point of
biggest
view,
thing, right?
hey, this is, yeah, what's bigger than that? I don't think they understand that to the common fan who's seen Stephanie and Shane, even Shane to a lesser extent, on TV ad nauseum for months, that it's just kind of eye rolling.
Yeah.
But to them, it's like, the McMahons, who you can tell by how they're portrayed on TV, who's more important in WWE than the McMahon family?
No one. Yeah, I mean, it was
Yeah.
it's showing out your champion Dean Ambrose, who, I thought he had the standout moment of the show, but yeah, I mean, he was tucked away in the middle of the show, not really any attention on him. I don't know how much to read into this with Ambrose, Greg, but just to kind of switch topics for a second before we get to phone calls, but not a lot of attention to Ambrose. He did have the great promo opposite Rollins. They're still trying to incorporate Roman Reigns in the mix. You've got now Ambrose versus Rollins for the title next Monday on Raw, and then both of them will be in the title match against Reigns at Battleground in 2 weeks. But Ambrose, I don't know if they've soured on him as champion, or they just they didn't think that it was worth giving him a lot of TV time. I don't know what it was about, but they didn't really make a big deal about the champion tonight. I don't know how much to read into that, Greg. What do you think?
Well, they're trying to serve two masters here. They've got a battleground event coming up with a triple threat main event for the WWE title, in which one of the guys can't be on TV leading up to it, so that makes things difficult. And they've also got to really put the hype of the roster split into overdrive. And they really concentrated more on the roster split this week, and you could tell just the way the announcers were produced
Oh
that
gosh, it was
that was the A1 focus without doubt.
Oh.
So for this particular week, yes, Ambrose had to take a back seat to the hype train in full gear for the roster split.
I mean, it was bad. I mean, it was every match they somehow found a way to swing it back to the draft. And I get reinforcement, people are tuning in throughout the show, but I think the biggest example of the problem and why people are so frustrated with the presentation is the club versus Enzo and Cass match. The crowd was red hot. Whether they're chanting for AJ on the outside or John Cena, who was not there but showed up, or even Enzo, how you doing? How you doing? I mean, the crowd was fired up and red hot, and the announcers did not acknowledge a single chant. They were too busy reading the promo lines, the pre-scripted stuff about the draft, and this and that and the other. And I mean, you just want someone to slap off the headset and listen to the crowd. It was so frustrating because that was like what the fifth match of the show, fifth, sixth match, and every match, the same talking points about the draft. And you're like, God, like just listen. It was just so frustrating. And Just so tone deaf, the presentation of the announcers, and especially, I mean, tonight was bad. Oh my gosh. So I'm glad you brought that up, Greg. It was just, oh dear. Oh man. But Greg, any other major high point? We'll take a quick break and then we'll go to phone calls. Any major high point you think we should address here at the top?
Well, I guess we've got to address the Wyatt
Ah.
family New Day deal.
Tell you what, we'll do that after the break because that's gonna be worth a discussion. So we'll hit a break, which we call a teaser in the business, folks. We'll hit that right after this.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
We just heard the note about MMATorch.com. I got to give a shout out to my boy Jamie Pennick over at MMATorch.com. Wall-to-wall coverage of a huge weekend for UFC. UFC 200, including the Brock Lesnar return fight, which was referenced a couple times during Raw tonight. But Jamie has been working hard on his WrestleMania weekend, if you will, with UFC 200 coverage, plus coverage of UFC being sold for $4 billion with a B. That was officially announced today. So all that, be sure to go to MMATorch.com for all the coverage of a huge weekend MMA with some WWE tie-ins, obviously, with Brock Lesnar. Greg, you mentioned on the other side of the break, and we've got to talk about it. It's the Wyatt family. It's New Day. You know, it's 6 days after TNA's final deletion. It's going to draw that similar conclusion and thought, and you're going to be thinking about that while watching that. Me, I'm not a fan of any of it. I didn't like either one. That's just me. That's not my style. I didn't like this. I didn't like the TNA one. It is what it is. I just feel like it's too campy for me. But that's my opinion. I want your opinion, Greg. What did you make of the New Day Wyatt, you know, outside the ring brawl in the bushes and in the trees and all that kind of stuff, and then any comparison or contrast to Final Deletion from TNA last Tuesday?
Yeah, it's inevitable that they're going to be compared just because of the timing. I think both had their strong suits. I think the Final Deletion with its comparative to other things in pro wrestling, its overproduction and its ability to not take itself too seriously. I liked that aspect of it. The Wyatt family New Day, by contrast, was to be taken very seriously. And I thought that there were some strengths as far as the production of that goes to make it really feel like a scene from a horror movie. And I think that's what WWE was trying to get across here, and I think they did that well. The Wyatts have struggled to find their niche as to what they're supposed to be. You get the sense that WWE wants them to be these big, scary heels, yet they're not always portrayed that way. So there seems to be a push and pull with the booking of them. This, I think, got them closer to where WWE and really the fans want them to be. I think the fans want them to be a scary backwoods horror movie type villainous group, and within the confines of the PG rating that WWE works with. So I think this type of thing is more suited to the Wyatts than the exploding monitors or other things that WWE, other supernatural events that WWE has tried to get over the characters of the Wyatts or get over their powers. Okay. So I think this worked better in that context. You had the shaky cam still with the fight scenes, just to let you know it was WWE produced. And I also spoke of your conversation on Twitter with Mike McMahon earlier, and I echo Mike's sentiments after this segment aired, is it just kind of it just ended, and there was no finality. And I don't know if that was the point, if there's going to be some follow-up on SmackDown or Raw that would explain it. But whereas the final deletion had a very clear ending to it, this was kind of left up in the air. You know, the riots had surrounded New Day, and that was it. But I also like, and I think it gives the Wyatt family more credibility as these horror-type villains for the laughy, jokey, fun-loving New Day to actually be taking them seriously. To actually, for the first time, second time maybe, in their existence, to really treat something as a serious threat, to treat something seriously. I think that's effective in putting the Wyatts over as the scary, mean dudes that they should be. So I think it had its strengths, but you know, it's always going to be looked at kind of through the lens that I think you're looking at it, James, is it is an overproduced, overdramatic scene that feels too separate from the pro wrestling world of the WWE or the sports entertainment world that WWE has created, that WWE universe. It's too far removed from that to be taken seriously. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, have at it.
Yeah, that's always been my concern with the Wyatt's presentation, is how do you bring it back to a wrestling ring? You know, like, how do you... In the beginning, it was, how would Bray Wyatt even wrestle? You know, where did he learn how to wrestle competently to be able to compete against these so-called superstars? It was, you know, that was always the, you know, you got all the stuff going on, and then we're gonna filter it down to a wrestling match where there's rules, and Bray's gonna break on a five count and understand that. You know, like, just, I've never been able to get that character into a wrestling setting, and I think this took it too far out again. To where now I don't know how this gets back to a tag team title match. You know, like we're unless a tag team title match is happening on the compound and they do the final deletion where a referee drives up and there's someone someone from the Louisiana State Athletic Commission to sanction the match, and you know, it just gets a little bit too ridiculous for me. I think this stuff gets, you know, my thought was, you know, the final deletion stuff is, you know, did the match result count? Did the North Carolina Athletic Commission sanction the match? And you know, who's this referee? You know, it just, I too many questions. Who's filming it? You know, who allowed it to be filmed? Who sent the footage to WWE, TNA? It's just too many things that I don't feel like fit. And that's always been the problem for me with the Wyatts, is I don't feel they fit in the confines of a wrestling show. It's just too many, you know, there's too many elements about them that doesn't feel like wrestling. And that's always been my concern with the act, is how do you filter it down into a wrestling setting? And I don't know if that this helped, but it did make New Day seem more serious, as you kind of talked about. It put them in a little bit of jeopardy. You felt like they were in trouble. But then it was like a wrestling match broke out where, you know, Xavier cut off the heels. There was Braun on top of the truck, and he got, you know, like, he was got crotched on the top rope, and you know, big baby face comeback, and it's just too much for me. I can't do that. So, I don't know. These things frustrate me, Greg. I want the wrestling in the wrestling ring. That's kind of how I feel, but I don't know. That's me. Greg, let's get some phone calls. Got a lot of different things we could talk about on tonight's Raw post game show. Ton of stuff. A ton of stuff happened tonight. I just don't know if any of it was important or, like, moved anything. It was kind of a weird show where a lot of stuff happened, but by the end of it, you're like, did anything really happen? So we've got a lot to talk about. Let's get some phone calls. 646-721-9828. You're on the PW Torch livecast, Raw postgame show, Torch assistant editor James Caldwell, joined by Torch columnist Greg Parks for the full show here on a Monday night during the summer of Greg. And let's go to our first caller, 478 area code. Welcome to show 478. Please state your name, where you're calling from.
Darrell from Georgia. How you doing today, James and Greg?
Hey, doing good, Darrell. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, man, I don't know how to take the brand split. Now, everything, we already knew that it was going to split Shane and Stephanie. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how to take it. It seemed like when Vince, when he said, Shane, you get Raw. And then when he mentioned Raw, SmackDown, and when he mentioned Raw, he was like, the flagship show, the three-hour show, Stephanie. And it seemed like he made the show seem secondary mm-hmm. when he gave his that little part right there. And I was on Twitter, and I was looking at what you were saying earlier about the first hour and the baby faces for the titles. That was a real big thing about me and the brand splitting hall, because the one key factor nobody ever looks at is their booking style. They haven't showed us no opportunity, no time that they can make the shows look different by the way how they book the shows. They don't even book them no different. They don't book different hours in Raw to look differently, so you can be like, well, maybe Raw might look like this, or maybe SmackDown might look like this. Oh, I'm excited now. It's still the same old, seeming like at the end of this, maybe at WrestleMania, we're going to be beefing with Shane and Stephanie, going to have two people fight for them for control of both shows. That's what it looks like.
Oh, jeez.
And
yeah.
It just looked like it's just a marketing tool. So I want to see what y'all thought about that.
Yeah. I'm with you, Darrell. I'm concerned, too, because, yeah, I mean, like Shane's big, you know, storyline context, but his sales pitch to run, you know, something was, I guess he was trying to pitch running SmackDown, was, you know, we're going to make it look and feel different. It'll, you know, and just all the dog whistle stuff about, you know, glass ceilings breaking and nobody's getting, you know, nobody gets any chance on Raw and all kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't like that. I just feel like it sends the wrong message about what you're trying to do. It's just too insider. And Greg, we haven't seen a plan. You know, we don't know if there's a plan. We don't know if on July 19th they're going to show up with, you know, more than just changing the theme song, you know, from the Green Day era to the current, you know, you've seen all the SmackDown theme songs, Greg. And, you know, like what is a different look and feel? What does that actually mean in WWE? You know, is that NXT? Is Shane going to, as you kind of talked about earlier, is Shane going to call up NXT and that's going to be the different look and feel? And or is it just going to be a couple different graphics, some new music, and, you know, some like small minor tweak, but it still kind of fits the WWE feel? You know, I'm not convinced any of this is going to be different, you know, until maybe we see something on July 19th. But Greg, is it more than just lip service? Do you see some signs that there will be an actual change that you can look forward to covering on Tuesday nights for us?
I can't say that I've seen or heard a sign so far. It's all going to be, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
We've been down this road too many times with WWE before. I think the best thing for WWE to do would be a wholesale change. And Darrell talked about, you know, how everything feels the same. Hopefully, with the two distinct writing teams, which is what's going to happen, not only is the roster going to be split, but the writing team is going to be split. Raw is going to have its own writing team. SmackDown is going to have its own writing team. Granted, they'll all report to Vince McMahon, so it'll have Vince McMahon's thumbprint on it for sure. But hopefully getting those two writing teams separate will lead to changing things up and shaking things up a bit, at least on one of the brands, just to be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully one of the brands, you know, at their first creative meeting on that team that says, you know, let's try and change things up as much as we possibly can without scaring Vince by changing the formula too much. You know, I think that's what they've kind of got to do. And
well, Kevin Dunn, yes, don't scare him either.
Yeah. And you've got to change. You've got to change the set. You've got to change. I would change the logo, keep it blue and red. That's fine with me, but change the set, change the aesthetics. Give fans the impression right off the bat that this is different. This is different from the old SmackDown, or even this is different from the old Raw. This truly is a new era, because like you said, they've given lip service for so long, yet to the naked eye of the viewer, everything looks and feels the same. There may be different wrestlers, but they're all playing the same part. so let's really go through and let's really get some wholesale changes. Again, that's, you know, pie in the sky dream, I guess, of mine. But hopefully it's more than just talking points this time. Hopefully there's some action behind it.
It should be to the point where the guys and gals on Raw are jealous of the roster that's on SmackDown. Like, they should, like, the changes on SmackDown should be so grand within, you know, within reason, that the Raw roster is actually jealous of the people, you know, even though they're on the flag, as, you know, as Darrell said, the flagship, the 3-hour spectacular every Monday night of Raw. Even though they're on that show, they should be looking at Tuesday night and saying, oh, man, I wish I was on that show. I want to be there. Like, that should be the goal, is to make that show so different that people feel that way. And Darrell pointed out something from the first hour. I mean, the first hour, or the first, at least the first 45 minutes, I don't know what happened there. But it really captured why they're doing a brand split, because they have defined down 90% of the roster to either being irrelevant or worthless or castrated. I mean, just for lack of a better term. But, you know, I mean, like, the way that, you know, Zack Ryder, who's supposed to be the number one contender of the U.S. title, just gets beat by Sheamus in 2 minutes. I know it was a pre-match beatdown, but, I mean, it was just sort of like, huh? And then Darren Young wins a battle royal because other people eliminated themselves. It was just like he won by a fluke, and that's your number one contender to the Intercontinental title. And then Lucha Dragons lose to... Who did Lucha Dragons lose to? I've already forgotten who they lost to, but to Tyler Breeze and Fandango. Yeah, it just kind of came out of nowhere where, you know, it was like three straight segments to start the show where the babyfaces just looked terrible. And I'm like, this is why you were trying to do a brand split, because you're trying to reboot all these characters that had just been beaten down by the system. And unless you change fundamentally the way you structure the shows, it's, you know, you're just rearranging, you know, they're just rearranging characters that you've defined down as meaningless. So they really have to have a different approach on both shows, but SmackDown for sure, you know, to really capture what they're trying to do with this whole, right now, marketing and lip service. But, yeah, Greg, I don't know how well we're going to do with the Intercontinental title situation, you know. Darren Young and Miz, there's no issue there right now. They'll be on Miz TV on SmackDown, so we'll see some issue come from this. But it just feels so random. You know, they're on the house shows for the weekend. It seemed like a random pairing. Now it's on TV. That Battle Royal, I thought was, you know, wasn't very good. But
I think now was the joke about Darren Young winning the way he did, though. Was that because they spent so much time hyping up they're going to make Darren Young great again and getting him all prepared and giving him this chicken wing finisher and, you know, having to walk to the next town to for a show like Bob suggested and having to do all these squats and everything like that. And he wins the Battle Royal without actually eliminating one of the final contestants. I mean, was that the gag to making Darren Young great again? In making him great again, he's just kind of – these opportunities are just kind of falling in his lap, and it makes him look great without actually having to do anything.
Hey, that's giving him a lot of credit for that. And if that's the gag, I don't know what the point is, but that would complete the gag if the whole vignettes were this is all pointless, stupid stuff, and then his first match with Backlund on Raw is he wins by doing absolutely nothing. I guess that fits, but I'm like, it just feels so backwards. Like, why would you make that the payoff?
And then somehow his battleground match with The Miz, Bob Backlund negotiates that the title can change hands on countout or disqualification. So Miz tries to splash Darren Young into the metal post outside the ring.
Uh-huh.
Young, like, is so out of it, he falls. Miz conks himself out on the ring post, and Young somehow, like, rolls into the ring, and Miz is knocked out outside the ring, and Young wins the title.
That would complete the gag, yeah.
I've just made Darren Young great again.
You have indeed, Greg. That's why you're here. That is why you're here. Seinfeld jokes and explain the booking. That's why we book you, Greg, every other
week.
Yeah, I like it. At least it makes me feel better about it, because that the way he won was just so like, huh? You know, like this is the big debut. Is this okay? So
yeah. Well, that's what it felt to me at first. I'm thinking you're debuting him in a battle royal, and then you tweeted about the house shows over the weekend, and I'm like, oh, maybe he's gonna actually win, and then uh-huh. he did.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was in the match until, you know, they showed Backlund at ringside, and then it clicked with me. I'm like, oh wait, he's actually gonna win this thing, because the house shows over the weekend. So, and then I'm like, okay, well, let's see how he actually wins. Will he have some dramatic comeback and, you know, a big elimination? And then it's like, oh no, he just stood there. So, that didn't quite match expectations. So, oh well, we'll see how this goes. We'll give it some time. But I thought for this was not good in my book. And next up on the show, 630 area code, please state your name, where you're calling from.
It's Craig, Chicago.
Hey, Craig, haven't heard from you in a second. What's your mind tonight?
Oh, you know, the Chicago Cubs, they need me right now. So.
Oh, it's an all-star break, and so you got some downtime. I got you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure glad I got to see Final Deletion tonight. I thought I missed it, you know.
Slightly different filter, a little different place from the show. It was only one segment, not eight segments. Yeah. So, yeah, I could see how you missed that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if I was them, I'd be kind of embarrassed for showing that, especially that close. I would have waited a couple of weeks down the road, but it is what it is. Mm. I didn't call to talk about that. I called to talk about this lovely brand split that we got coming up again.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people love it. Some people are indifferent. I thought the first one sucked, and I'm pretty confident that this one's going to suck too. Mm. It's going to be the same old, you know, we're going to wind up having two champions again. There's not going to be a definitive number one champion. Raw's still going to be the top show. SmackDown's going to be the secondary show. It already feels like a secondary show because it's only going to be 2 hours compared to the big match.
Hey, don't tell me to go 3 hours, Craig. Don't do that. Don't give them ideas.
Yeah. You know, 3 hours is okay. I know some people hate the 3 hours, but 3 hours is good if your show is good,
uh-huh.
You know? If your show sucks, then 3 hours is gonna suck.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what to make of them anymore. Now I'm just kind of watching them out of pure habit. You know.
Yeah, I think Craig, a lot of it is we're looking for signs of some sort of identification of the change. You know, there's some, you know, Shane McMahon. Yeah, I go back to Shane's, you know, his business pitch, his presentation, his PowerPoint. You know, maybe we needed a PowerPoint, Greg, and we could have seen some graphics and some mock write-ups and changes and, all his different business ideas he has for SmackDown. But, you know, it was just sort of a, well, I'm going to do this. You know, it was just kind of a, okay, well, we haven't seen any signs of that ever, of that happening. So we don't, it's like we're just waiting for some sort of sign that there's actually going to be real change, and you know, maybe it'll shock us on July 19th. But, Greg, one point I did want to focus on that Craig said is the title situation, and you know, they've got the WWE title match on Raw next Monday. Then you got another title match on the pay per view in 2 weeks. Do you sense any more that they're going to split the titles, and do you think that's a good idea? Two parts, Greg.
I think they are going to split the title just based on the verbiage of not referring to this as the World Heavyweight Championship, now just the WWE title.
Yeah.
It's going to be some kind of split. And whether it starts next week with Rollins versus Ambrose or whether it starts at Battleground with a triple threat match, there are many different ways you could get to a title being held up or the ownership in question by way of a triple threat, and then you've got two guys in the match, or even three if it comes down to that, claiming the title is theirs.
Right.
So I do believe there will be two titles. I really go back and forth on whether or not that's a good thing. I think in some ways it is. If you really are dedicated to the split, and it's a true hard split, I think it's okay to have two champions. Because you want the shows to be as self-contained as possible. And if you've got one champion going from show to show, it's not as self-contained. It's not as hard of a split. But if you've got two champions, that makes it a little, it makes the line drawn a little better, I think, and a little clearer, all things considered. And you don't have the messiness of, you know, what brand does the person go to now after they lost the title or something like that.
Right.
So I really think there are positives and negatives to having two titles, and it's all going to come down to how it's portrayed and how WWE works it, really.
Yeah. And I've presented the idea of how, you know, calling up the NXT title or, you know, NXT champions, in this case Samoa Joe, and having the NXT title being the top title on SmackDown, and that's the top prize, and that way you don't have to go back in time to having a world title on SmackDown and WWE title on Raw. It seems like they're already going to go ahead and do that, but, you know, that could have been one way to, you know, not have to split the titles, call up a title that's hot. The NXT title is hot right now, not to the mainstream audience, but you can bring along the mainstream audience to accept this as a top prize. People talk about it and talk about the lineage, and people are want a challenge for the title. They're excited about it. They want to go after Samoa Joe, you know, that sort of thing. You could build it up that way, but I just don't think they're going to do that. That's one way. But yeah, now you've got a scenario where, you know, you figure that there will be some situation where, if the champion is drafted to Raw, then Shane's got to sit there and say, okay, what do I do? How do I create a top champion? And is that where he, you know, pulls a Triple H and introduces a new heavyweight title belt, you know, and awards it to himself, somebody else. But I wonder how they'll actually get there. And obviously with two title matches in the next 2 weeks, there's an opportunity to create some sort of controversy, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, how does that work? So that'll be interesting to see. We'll see. But the title, yeah, it definitely feels like the title split's happening. And how they go about doing that, we'll see how that plays out. Let's go, Craig, thanks for your call. Let's go to our next phone call, 281, James out of Houston. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, guys. How y'all doing?
Hey, doing good. What's your mind, James?
Okay, I got three things. Two questions are probably one and the same, and then I have another question after that. The first thing is about Brock Lesnar. It looked like he got a heck of a payday for 15 minutes. do you think that with the payday that he got and the success of UFC 200, do you think that he could use that as a bargaining chip, either for more money, a bigger contract with the WWE, or because I'm pretty sure that the UFC, depending on how big UFC 200, like with the buy rates and everything, if they're going to back up the Brinks truck even more with him, how do you see that playing into his future? The second question has to do with the stock. Do you think with the stock going up above $20 today, do you think that had anything to do with the UFC being sold or the success of the WWE brand with Brock Lesnar being involved? I wanted to know your thoughts on that. And then also with the 1.87 rating last week, do you think that it'll come up above a 2.0 or do you think it'll stay below a 2.0 tonight? Thanks very much. Have a good day.
All right. Appreciate it, James. Good to talk to you. I'm going to safely predict they're back over at 2.0. I know they're up against the Home Run Derby, and usually the Derby takes a chunk out of the Raw audience, but, you know, the 4th of July took care of that last week. So I think people will come back, you know, maybe a little bit of word of mouth about Vince McMahon back on TV. That's always a signal to the audience that it's going to be an important show. What was the rating before 4th of July? I think it was like 2.2-ish, so... Yeah, Greg, do you have a prediction for the rating? I'm looking at they were at 1.87 last week. 2.21 was 2 weeks ago before the 4th of July. So I'm gonna go 2.3. I'm gonna go slightly above a 2.2. A lot of people missed last week. They'll come back this week. I'm gonna go 2.3 this week, which would be a huge jump from last week. What's your pick?
Yeah, it'll be over 2. I'm gonna say. What did you say it was 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago was a 2.21.
I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go 2.26.
Okay. All right. A slight bump from 2 weeks ago. That's kind of what I see it as. Is the what do the McMahons get credit for? You know, they don't get credit for the 1.87 bump. You know, 1.87 is the base. I mean, that's like sub basement. So anything above that, they don't get credit for past But past a 2.2, they would get some credit for that. So, you know, if it's below 2.2, then, you know, the McMahon family as a draw maybe has expired or something like that. Or at least it's not what it used to be. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm going to go 2.3. So you're a little bit below me. That's, you know, rounded to 2.3. Yeah, the whole Brock Lesnar thing is interesting, and I get the sense that Brock's going to fight again. I think that he's going to be hungry for another fight. I think now that he looked in great shape on Saturday, he doesn't have the diverticulitis. I totally botched that. He doesn't have the disease anymore, and I think that he's healthy.
You're like Michael Cole tonight. He had a rough night of it too.
Devon Dudley, I think, was his first one. That kind of set the tone for the night, and I just, you know, kind of followed his lead there. But yeah, I think that he's gonna want to fight again. And, you know, there's that big MSG New York City, first UFC show ever in New York fight, you know, card in November. I think it's November-ish. So that's going to be very tantalizing. And if he can work out a deal. And I think WWE's sitting there saying, oh, you know what, we got some positive press from this. And people talked about SummerSlam and you know, if Brock wins again, that makes us look pretty cool, and maybe there's something to this whole UFC thing. Maybe it's not so bad as we thought it was. So there might be a bit of a negotiation that happens, you know, when Brock's contract comes up, where WWE might want to say, okay, we'll willing to pay, you know, cut us in on the deal though, cut us in on the UFC aspect. So I do wonder how things will change over time, but yeah, Greg, I get a sense that he's gonna fight again. And you know, obviously after SummerSlam, they'll make that official decision. But I think he'd go out there. I think he'd go fight and win a couple more fights. You know, I know he's going to turn 39, I think, tomorrow or the day after. But I think he has a couple more fights, you know, around the time, you know, maybe before or after he turns 40. And what's your sense of Brock's future, Greg?
Yeah, I would definitely get that sense, too. And really, it's going to be up to WWE. And you never know. You really never know what cards they're going to want to play here. I was surprised at how little. I mean, they did nothing. They did nothing to hype up the fight beforehand. You know, if they had done some talking, if they had made it a point on their TV show to give Lesnar some press and, you know, that sort of thing, I would be more apt to say, yeah, I think they would really jump back in bed with UFC and do something here. But because they didn't even give him the time of day beforehand and only talked about it afterward when he won, I really wonder if they're gonna wanna do that. Like, what would be in it enough for WWE for them to, aside from keeping Brock Lesnar happy, which, you know, what he said at the end of his press conference, you know, Vince knows to keep him happy, you know, other than just wanting to keep Brock happy, because this is not a good deal they're gonna want to make for other people. They're not going to want other people looking at this as an example of what they can get away with.
Right.
So that's, and Vince is very careful about the perception within his company of what he's allowing his wrestlers to do outside the company. This could open some doors for some guys who want to do something similar. And that's always a dangerous thing for Vince. For most people, it wouldn't be, but Vince has his little quirks, I guess. So yeah, it's all what WWE can get out of it, what they even want out of it. If they allow Lesnar to work UFC again, you know, do they say, okay, we want one of your guys, we want someone to do a show for us, or is it just press? We want you to, you know, something similar. We want you to hype up our next big event on your show. Or does it go further than that? Does it not go even that far? You know, I don't know. Because WWE doesn't see UFC as competition, as far as what they're publicly saying, we know that's not the case. You know, what do they think would best benefit them in this kind of deal? I think that's really something that you'd have to ask yourself. And to be honest, I don't know what WWE would think in that regard.
Yeah, if they can get Ronda Rousey for WrestleMania to have a match, I think they'd be all in. You know what I mean? I think that if they can have a Rousey versus Stephanie McMahon match, or even Charlotte, you know, the two big ones for Rousey to wrestle would be either Stephanie or Charlotte in their eyes. If they can get that match at 33, you know, WrestleMania 33 next year, I think they would say, sure, Brock can fight as many times as you want. I think they'd be all in for that, because that would be the mainstream press are looking for, and the, you know, the brand awareness and the social media metrics and you know, all that
stuff. All I know, James, is I would like to be a fly in the room to hear the negotiations between Vince McMahon and Dana White if it ever got that far.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
They should broadcast that on the WWE Network.
And UFC Fight Pass simultaneously.
Yes, if that would ever come to it, if it ever came to Brock Lesnar wanting to fight again, UFC wanting him, and WWE saying, okay, we'll let you have it, but we've got to talk about what we get in return, I would love to hear that negotiation session.
Oh, yes. You know, I mean, you want to sell subs. Yeah, you get those two guys together on a show. You know, now we're off and running. Yeah, I mean, that would be really fascinating stuff. So, and to kind of go with James' other question about, you know, the WWE stock hit $20 per share for the first time since October of last year. The day before they reported third quarter earnings last year, I remember it very well because the stock was flying pretty high. And then they reported third quarter earnings last year, and investors really did not like what they saw. The stock dropped by $2, and it had not been back above $20 until today. And I think a lot of that was, I think it was more about the UFC the UFC being sold and that being announced. And I think people were like, oh, wow, like that's a lot of money for a company like UFC. What's very similar to UFC? Ooh, WWE. Let me buy some stock in WWE. I think there might have been some short-term interest in WWE because of what happened with UFC and WWE kind of being associated with UFC for the last couple of days. I think that they benefited from association, as James kind of talked about. You know, I don't have any, like, figures to back that up, but just my sense of it and what investment, financial investment websites were reporting on, that's my kind of, you know, estimated guess. What happened today is, you know, the stock price was up 5%. Overall market was up 0.5%. So, obviously, there was some positive movement for WWE specifically. McMahon's probably looking at that and saying, this is interesting. You know, stock went up pretty nicely today and all this UFC tie-in stuff. So I think that maybe he's warming up the idea of associating with UFC some more. And, you know, obviously Dana White and UFC promoted SummerSlam on the UFC pay-per-view. And, you know, in front of, you know, a couple million pay-per-view buys that, you know, that Saturday Night probably generated. And we'll see the official number. But, I could see a lot more cross. Yeah, no, we're not going to see CM Punk cross promotion. That's not going to happen in September. That'll kind of be on an island, but that would be really fascinating if there was some WWE UFC stuff about CM Punk, just based on how he left.
CM Punk would have to read a promo like Chuck Liddell did on the show.
Yeah, Liddell looked like he was being held hostage in a room. We had to read this promo for WWE 2K17.
I feel like that's how Punk would be, too, if he had to read something like that.
Playable character in WWE 2K17, CM Punk. Yeah, I mean, it would be like so depressing that he'd have to read that, yeah. Yeah, that will not be happening. So I think there's more to come from this. I really do. So we'll see how it plays out, especially as it relates to Brock over time. James, appreciate the call. Let's go to our next caller, 912 area code. Welcome to show 912. Please state your name. Where are you calling from?
Michael from Georgia.
Hey, Michael. What's your mind tonight?
I have two things.
Sure.
First thing is, Stephanie was revealed on TV, and it was dead silent, and then this man steps out of a limo, and the crowd pops. And then the same thing later on in the last segment. That I like the other thing I want to mention is the how the Dean Ambrose promo felt real and not scripted and weird. And every other time he's gotten close to having like a hyped up promo, it's always been cut off. That's all I got.
Yeah, I really like Dean's promo tonight. And part of it was, Greg, that the first part of the show was really bad. We're, you know, kind of looking for, you know, where's some hope on the show? And I thought Rollins. You know, the thing with Rollins and Reigns kind of splicing in Reigns' answers from past Michael Cole sit-down interviews. It was almost comedic in a way because, you know, one clip was Roman Reigns with a title belt behind him. And the next clip was him holding the belt. And they went back to the belt behind him. And then went back to him holding the belt. It was sort of you know, it was like ridiculous, and it was kind of a supposed to be ridiculous because, you know, Seth Rollins producing producing this ridiculous video. So I thought it worked on a certain level as ridiculous as it was, but then Ambrose's promo was really good. Really strong babyface promo. Greg, your thoughts on that Rollins report deal, and then Dean Ambrose really fired up, and as Michael said, really felt authentic.
Yeah, it was the old Homer Simpson interview style when he was on Rock Bottom on an episode of The Simpsons, which I, you know, that kind of thing always gets me, and I enjoyed that for what it was. But yeah, the Dean Ambrose promo is universally been praised as one of not only one of the highlights of this Raw, but one of his better promos that he's done. Mm-hmm. And it came at a good time. He's champion. You know, he needs to take that gravitas as champion and be able to use it. And it was good to see him get out of the, oh, isn't Dean Ambrose kooky type of deal for a little while at least. So, you know, next week is going to be interesting. A big part of me thinks, okay, Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins for the championship, knowing that the triple threat is still in effect for Battleground, it's going to be one of those, okay, by the end of the show, nothing's going to change type deals, you know, so like so many Raws are. But, you know, there's always that possibility, always that chance that it could be something more. So we'll see.
And I think they set it up where it does seem like there's a possibility that this actually will be there might be a title change, you know. I think they created enough of a question of like, they might actually change the title because Ambrose is going to be in the title match anyways at Battleground. You know, it could, you know, almost be a little bit of a. I always go back to this one in my mind of, you know, Lex Luger and Hulk Hogan were going to face off for the WCW title at Hog Wild, Road Wild, whichever one they were calling at the time. You know, it was like 97, 98, 99, summer of 97, 98, 99. And Luger won the WCW title from Hogan on the last Nitro before the pay-per-view. You know, and then Hogan won it back on the pay-per-view. You know, because they already had a title match set up. So it has that feel of maybe there's a chance they do switch it to Rollins. And then we get in the whole situation of...
And really, Ambrose...
Yeah. Go ahead.
And Ambrose has been portrayed somewhat as a fluke champion. He came in and won the championship off of the Money in the Bank briefcase win. Rollins has stated his case for being champion. He's a former long-term champion. Roman Reigns is Roman Reigns. You know, he's the guy. So he's got that credibility going for him. So of the three, the champion is sort of the least credible as champion. So... going into next week, I think there's that thought, too. Not only, well, Ambrose is in the triple threat anyway, so if the titles change, nothing really changes beyond that. But also, Ambrose is not exactly a paper champion, but he's a guy who you get a sense with every match he goes into defending the title that he could lose it in that match. So that's something that could cause fans to tune in, too, that mentality that's been sort of subconsciously pushed by WWE and into the fans.
Yeah, that you know, there's always a chance he's just going to straight out lose. You know, he is just such a wild card, and you know, eventually your number comes up and you lose your match. But yeah, I think Ambrose made a case to be the real champion of this company, and I thought that promo was such a good promo, and you know, it's just. As Michael said, it just felt so real and authentic, and you know, contrast the rest of the show, which felt overly produced and overly scripted, and hit these points and all this, and you know, just felt like Ambrose was out there, just going, you know, just screw it, I'm just gonna cut, you know, I'm gonna cut a promo, and I thought that was really good. So I think he made a case to be champion beyond Battleground. We'll see if WWE feels the same way, or maybe he'll just be the split off champion, you know, and it'll kind of be like he never actually lost, but he didn't win.
If you're like me, you've got a list of favorite websites and a list of favorite podcasts that you visit either every day or throughout the week, but there's probably not a lot of crossover between the two. However, with PW Torch Livecast, that's different. If you're a listener of this show, you should also be visiting our main website, pwtorch.com, loaded with updates covering news in more depth than you'll find anywhere else. editorials you won't find anywhere else, live TV coverage and pay-per-view coverage that's unmatched, and so much more on a newly redesigned, optimized, lightning-fast website. That's pwtorch.com. Check it out every day and bookmark it. No matter what device you're using, whether it's a mobile phone, a tablet, a laptop, or a desktop, there's a version that fits your screen and customized for your device. Check it out, pwtorch.com, one of the top sources of pro wrestling insider news since 1987 and online as a website since 1999. Don't miss out. Don't just listen to the live cast. In between live cast listens or while you're listening to the live cast, check out the latest headlines and exclusive articles at pwtorch.com. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
Let's go to another phone call. And next up here on the Raw Postgame Show, 773 area code. Welcome to show 773. Please state your name. Where are you calling from?
Boris from Chicago.
Boris, what's going on tonight?
Well, we were waiting on this moment, as we say. Pretty much we knew this was going to be a bootleg version of the deletion.
Oh, the Wyatts, yeah.
Was. Oh, my God. It was terrible. I mean, not like I said on the tweet, not even the slickest production could have helped what they was trying to do because it was done. And whether we liked TNA or, you know, whatever, it was excellent. For what it was. But for, you know, WWE, they have to do it a different way to me, you know. But overall right now, the product, oh, man, they just threw everything at the window. That's what it felt like to me with tonight's show. They just threw everything at the window and, you know, gave you the look and feel, oh, we really don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, I want to hit on the Wyatt's aspect, Boris. I'm glad you brought that up because we got an email that from Romeo in New York City who had a point, and Greg, I want to throw this at you, is the final deletion stuff from TNA, and Romeo said that one of the most important elements was the humor. Like, there was sort of they were trying to present it as a serious blow-off to this, you know, feud that's being presented as a real feud between the brothers on TNA TV, but there was a sense of understood campiness, understood humor, that this is like really ridiculous and over the top, you know, either enjoy it for what it is or, you know, delete it. whereas I think WWE went like super serious. Like, this is, you know, this is like really serious, and there was no humor, and I don't think they wanted there to be any humor. So I think that was the distinguishing factor, was TNA was trying to allow humor to be part of it, but not hit you over the head with it. And WWE was, you know, super serious, and this is like a real feud, you know, real battle happening in this cornfield type setting. Greg, when you look at it from that perspective of the two presentations, Do you think that's where WWE might have fallen down, is that they're trying to present this as Super Serious, but you can't do that, and you've got to have sort of a sense of humor to do this sort of thing?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they had to have any kind of undertones of, you know, we're taking this seriously, but also, you know, let's be able to laugh at the premise or anything like that.
Right.
It's okay that TNA did that, but WWE didn't have to do that to make it effective. You know, there are people, Bruce Mitchell, new to Twitter, Bruce Mitchell, by the way, he found the one that aired tonight better than the Final Deletion.
Right.
So there are people who you know, think that what we saw tonight from New Day and the Wyatts is better. And there's always going to be the comparison of the two, but I think if you just look at it for what it is, no, I don't think it needed to have any kind of humorous undertone to work. I think because the Wyatts were involved, I think, in fact, it probably worked better by being more serious than something more like TNA, where it was sort of a spoof, I guess, or had that campiness factor.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Bruce's main point, and I'll introduce this part of it, was the Final Deletion was sort of the end, and they, you know, like, there's nowhere else to go. And from a business perspective, Bruce's argument was the New Day Wyatt stuff is supposed to get you more excited to see what's next. And, you know, to see, you know, the Wyatts, I'm sorry, the New Day make that big comeback and show fire, and they're not just fun and games. They actually have some, you know, they have some fire. They can fight, you know, almost like Dean Ambrose, the Dean Ambrose promo, where he can do goofy, but man, when he gets serious, like, wow, he's really good, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think that's what they're trying to, you know, I think the goal was, from a business perspective, was to get you to want to see, man, I can't wait to see these guys have a match. You know, this has gotten really crazy. I want to see them settle this in the ring. I think that was the goal. I just think the execution was to where it was so over the top. And as I said earlier, I don't see how you can funnel this down to a wrestling match. I think they're just so far out there with this now that I don't see how this translates to wanting to see a fight happen in the ring. So I get where Bruce was coming from with the argument. I just think that the Wyatts are just so out there that you can't do that. And so I wonder what is next. Like, you know, do they just show up on Raw next Monday and, hey, we're back? You know, I don't know what's next for this, Greg. And that's where I kind of struggle with. I think both have a flaw, and I'm not sure how they conquer the flaw of the Wyatts and New Day. That's kind of my issue with it.
Luckily, James, it's not up to you to have to decide where they go next. All you have to do is sit back and watch.
And evaluate, yes. And analyze, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So we'll see. Email question, kind of following up on Seth and Dean. Email from VIP member Travis in Edmonton. He wants to see Seth and Dean on the same brand, especially separated from Roman Reigns, because he thinks they bring out the best in each other, and I would agree. I think that Seth and Dean, there's some sort of chemistry they have, and you know, Seth almost kind of looks down on Dean like his like little brother, and Dean's like, no, man, you're the crazy one, and Seth's like, no, you're the crazy one, and they just sort of, you know, there's just something to that. So, what's your prediction, Greg, as far as, you know, will all three guys be in the same brand? If you were to do two and one, which two would you have on the same brand of the Shield guys?
Oh, boy. I guess it really depends on who you have around them and what other superstars you have on that brand. So if we go, what was the rumor? It was Cena and Styles on
SmackDown,
yeah. Right, and Reigns and Rollins on Raw.
So where does Ambrose
go? So that would leave, you know, I guess Ambrose would be, I would want Ambrose on SmackDown because Cena is that legacy star. And even tonight, they started talking about the fact that Cena's not going to be around forever, and that's not something they touch on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for the days when Cena isn't there, if he's off doing a movie or if he's getting his fingers in other pies, like the ESPY Awards and all the kind of stuff that he's been doing lately, you still want a top babyface on that brand who can – if Cena's not there for 1 week or an extended period, there's no drop-off. or there's very little drop-off. And I think Ambrose would be that next guy up. So Ambrose on SmackDown. And, you know, it gives you Ambrose versus Styles, too, at the top, which hasn't been run into the ground.
Yeah, pretty much Styles at anything, you know, feels fresh. It still feels fresh. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the Styles and Reigns not right now, but, you know, Styles and Cena 2 is still out there. We haven't seen the rematch, and that's out there. So, yeah, Styles and Orton, Styles and Rollins. I mean, there's so many matchups for Styles that, yeah, whatever brand he ends up on is going to be really good. Another question from Travis that I wanted to touch on. This is interesting. Is, you know, we've seen a couple weeks of them referencing Roman Reigns and having the heel, Seth Rollins, just really hammer him over the head with it, and the suspension, and you're such a screw-up, and you messed up, and you're an idiot, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, as the point is, you're trying to get sympathy on Reigns, like, oh, man, the heel's just being so mean, and, yeah, he messed up, but, I mean, like, gosh, he's going over the top with it. But as Travis brought up, Greg, it's almost kind of backfiring in a way, because I think people are like, yeah, he did screw up. He is an idiot. I agree with Seth Rollins, you know, because I think there's just so much angst against the Roman Reigns character that people just and I finally got it when they aired I think it was USA Network did an ad spot coming back from break, and we heard Reigns' voice for the first time in like 3 or 4 weeks, and it just sounded so dry and robotic, and I think it just captured all the criticism of the character and of Roman Reigns, and I was like, that's why people don't like him. He just sounds so, you know, it's like you just don't want to hear him talk, and you know, having not heard him talk for 3 weeks, it was just sort of jarring to hear him talk again, and I think it was a reminder why people just don't like the character, and I think that the way they've actually presented Seth Rollins talking about Roman Reigns has actually made people agree with Rollins to heel, you know, the opposite of the intended purpose. But Greg, what do you make of how they presented the suspension and having Rollins do the promos? And what do you think that what does it feel like that Reigns is going to come back to at Battleground? Like, what kind of environment do you think they're kind of setting up for him at Battleground now?
Hostile.
Yeah.
That's the kind of environment. You know, I get what they're trying to do. I really do. It's not going to work. It's just not.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless him for trying. But, you know, I don't think the Rollins stuff is necessarily making people who were on the fence side more with Rollins. But I also don't think it's getting people to sympathize with Reigns. The people who are going to sympathize with Reigns were already on the side of Reigns to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not gonna move anyone else over to that side. And from the sounds of it, even the house shows,
mm-hmm.
which were once the saving grace of the Roman Reigns babyface push, those house show reactions, because
mm-hmm.
people could point to them and say, "Well, see, he's getting cheered on the house shows. That's the more casual audience. That's the audience we're trying to appeal to with the next big star." Even those reactions are not as babyface as they once were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more reports I'm reading, the more reports that, you know, Reigns is getting booed and this is even a family crowd, you know? So that, that does not portend well for Reigns' return. It's going to be brutal, and WWE has no one to blame but themselves.
Mm. Agreed. I think you got to bring him back as a heel. Or at least, you know, begin the process of the heel run. You know, it doesn't have to be day one that he's back as a heel, but there's no alternative. I mean, you just can't keep, you know, doing what you've been doing. You know, it hasn't worked. Let's go to a couple more phone calls. And next up here on the Raw Post Game Show, out of the 478 area code, welcome to the show 478. Please state your name, where you're calling from.
Chris from Georgia.
Oh, hey, Chris. How you doing tonight, Chris?
Oh, good. How you doing?
Hey, doing good. What's your mind?
James, I don't know if you noticed this, but on Twitter, there's something floating around where they're actually, like, they made a mistake by announcing that the Yes Movement takes over SmackDown Live.
I did not see that. Greg, did you see something about that?
I did. It was actually as we were doing the show, I was on Twitter, and I saw someone retweet an image from, I believe it was WWE.com, had the Raw preview or maybe the WWE app, and it was talking about Mr. McMahon telling his children that they need to find GMs next week, and the title of that section was "The Yes Movement Takes Over SmackDown Live." So it's since been changed, but that's what it was. That's what it was called.
Well, Seth McMahon was doing the Daniel Bryan yes stuff in at the end of Raw. That could have been a subtle hint. And so, what do you think? So, okay, so Shane picks Bryan, and Stephanie picks Hunter. Yeah, the question that I've had about Hunter is, you know, he's the quote-unquote COO of WWE. So does he, you know, will he oversee? You know, will we have five authority figures where, you know, we're doing an org chart and you got Hunter, well, actually it would be six with Vince McMahon. So you got Vince on the top, and then right below him is Hunter, and then you break it off below that. You got, you know, the two on Raw and two on SmackDown. Or will Hunter assume a Raw COO position? That's what I've been trying to figure out what they're going to do with Hunter is, you know, is he CEO, COO of everybody, both brands, or just COO of Raw or SmackDown?
My eyes are beginning to glaze over, James. Can we talk about Daniel Bryan?
I had to lay it out a little bit here, but... otherwise, I have to dive in. I have to set the foundation for what we're talking about.
It's almost as bad as your Thursday former Thursday conference calls with business with WWE business news
discussions where you're like, let me know when we get the phone calls. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, I just put the headset down and walk around the apartment for 15 minutes and come back and. Are we ready to talk wrestling yet? But
on the org chart, I believe Triple H will be overseeing coffee distribution. So Daniel Bryan running SmackDown. I don't know what to do with that one yet because he's, you know, it's that thing of NXT and the Cruiserweight Challenge and the network is almost in this separate universe, and then we're gonna bring it to SmackDown and my head hurts. Greg, what, like, Bryan running SmackDown, is this separate from the Cruiserweight stuff? What do you think?
Yeah, I would say so. And it makes sense that Shane McMahon, a man of the people, would pick Daniel Bryan, also a man of the people, to run his show. And you have to imagine there wouldn't be a lot of personality conflict there. That should be a show that runs smoothly. Now, whoever Stephanie picks to run Raw, you know, her personality is very hands-on. I don't think she would be able to stay in the background and just let this general manager run things on their own without sticking her nose into it and giving her opinion on things. So there's bound to be, unless it's Hunter, and even then it still might happen. But if it isn't, I can't imagine us going a few weeks without having a bit of a butting of heads there, the people in charge. So I as the SmackDown recapper on PWTorch.com, at least until Wednesday's PW Torch brand extension draft live cast with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, I would welcome our Daniel Bryan overlord to run SmackDown for us.
Nicely plugged. The schedule on the live cast here, Tuesday, Wade Keller, Sean Radican's on tomorrow, 1 o'clock Eastern, talking about the Cruiserweight Tournament. The day before the Cruiserweight Tournament kicks off, Sean has seen, you know, the majority of the guys and covered them and written about them that are in the tournament. There's some very obscure names that WWE's taking great pride in finding very obscure individuals to be part of this tournament. But Sean, never fear, Sean has seen the majority of the individuals and covered them. So he'll be on tomorrow's live cast. And as you mentioned, Greg, Wednesday, Pat Mino, Jim Valley, the PW Torch draft special. You have to tune in to find out what that's about at 5:30 Eastern on Wednesday. And maybe there'll be a few surprises in store for us with that one. But yes, it will be an interesting couple of live casts. And obviously Tuesday with Wade and Sean, and then Wednesday with Pat and Jim Valley. So stay with us here on the live cast all this week. It should be a really interesting ride to see what happens on Wednesday, especially. Greg, let's go to a final phone call, and we'll wrap up with some other items of note from Raw. Let's go to the 305 area code up next. 305, please state your name, where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, DJ from Miami.
DJ, what's your mind tonight?
I got two quick things. I got a comment first. I want you guys to do a live cast for the live SmackDown. I hope you guys can do that because there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to go on. My first thing is, I don't know, I think they're pushing the gun, like the Kaz and the Shield and the Club. I think they could have waited. I would like to see that with two titles, you know, the titles, you know, that right there, they should have waited. But, the brand split, they're just rushing everything, and I don't think they know what's going on. But I feel like, I don't know why, I feel like they want the new stars to come in, because if Hunter is going to be running Raw, then, you know, it's going to be more NXT-esque because, mm-hmm. you know, Shane doesn't know about NXT too much. Hunter's the one who's running it. And, you know, and they have more NXT than, you know, the old dinosaurs now, you know, because it's new invasion. So that's my first man.
Real quick on that, DJ, because that's the problem with the Hunter having the split personality stuff is Shane is almost Greg being Triple H. You know, like Shane, his character is taking credit for the NXT call-ups, and it's almost like Shane is playing the role of Triple H's NXT personality. And it's this weird, there's this weird conflict where Shane's playing NXT Hunter and WWE Hunter isn't even on TV, and you know, and like if Hunter came in to take credit for NXT and Shane, no, I already took credit for that. I called up these guys. Then you had this whole storyline conflict of, well, Shane said he's claiming this, and Hunter's not actually doing this. And then it just, again, they have to resolve. And Wade Keller said this on his hotline yesterday on the PW Church VIP website. They have to resolve the Triple H split personality. I mean, this is the time to do it, and they have to do it. I mean, you can't have these two things mm-hmm. exist in the same quote-unquote universe of Hunter as bad guy on main TV, and here's Hunter good guy in NXT. And there has to be a resolution to this, and I hope that's what they do here, because otherwise it's, you know, Shane's playing NXT Hunter on main TV. That's what's going on here. But, I hope
they
resolve this.
Yeah, that's especially true if NXT is going to have a presence on SmackDown. And we don't know that. That's just speculation at this point. But if that's the case, then, you know, putting him on Raw keeps him far enough away from it to where it may not be that big of a deal. But if there's any kind of significant presence on Raw, yeah, that would have to be explained. You know, he's the babyface in NXT, the leader in NXT, and yet he's a heel on main roster TV. So that would have to be explained if NXT has a significant presence. I don't think WWE would feel that they would need to explain it if Triple H is named GM of Raw and they just do random NXT call-ups for SmackDown and Raw. I don't think they would feel that they would need to address that.
And the other big part of that, too, is that Hunter was part of the Authority, which, as heels, has been labeled as, you know, non-progressive and, you know, stuck in their old ways and glass ceilings and stuff like that. And then you have the Hunter on NXT who's about opportunity and, you know, break through the glass ceiling and everybody gets a chance to be a big star and here's the best matches on the planet type stuff. And it's, you know, if you're trying to bring Hunter back as a heel who represents non-progression and meanwhile he's playing NXT, on NXT he's playing the progressive guy, then it's like, okay, just, you know, we just can't do this anymore. You know, there's got to be with Shane coming back, there's been a shift in the narrative about the Authority, and they've got to resolve it now. And I don't know if they recognize that. Maybe they do, and they finally will resolve it now. I certainly hope so, because it's just a little bit too inconsistent at this point, especially with NXT being such a big deal right now. DJ, go ahead with your other point.
My second one is the Brock Lesnar and thing. I mean, we were saying last time is that we didn't want him to go get Orton. Orton just come back with a shoulder injury and now it's going to be like Super City. I think Brock should have came back tonight and said something and the crowd would have went crazy. But, I mean, I'm just not looking forward to that match, especially after he won. They need to throw him Roman Reigns, like we were saying, and let, you know what I mean? Let him
Brock destroy
go
Roman
against
Reigns.
A big guy. Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, I don't, it's just not fair to me is that they're going to give this guy another chance, and whatever he did, drugs, whatever it was, and he's going to go right in the title picture. If I was a wrestler, I would say, yo, I'm next in line. You messed up, I'm next. You know what I'm saying? Going back of the line. And that's what they should have did. You should have just thrown Roman to Brock, and that's it. I feel like Randy Orton's going to lose, right? What credit does Randy Orton have coming back after he lost from Brock Lesnar? I mean, none.
Yeah, I would say actually the worst message would be putting Reigns against Brock, because that's going to be a bigger match than, you know, whatever Reigns ends up doing at SummerSlam, I assume, you know, because I think just Brock has so much momentum going to UFC. You know, if you said, okay, Reigns, you get the Brock Lesnar match at SummerSlam, I think that's a bad message that he gets rewarded with that match. I don't know how the crowd will receive Orton when he comes back. The sense I get is that people are kind of like, it's okay. I think Orton is just so damaged from, you know, the Authority booking and being part of that group and being beat down and, you know, just sort of being in and out of important stuff and just sort of a tired character, I think, to a lot of people. What is your impression, Greg? What is your reaction to Brock and Orton at SummerSlam? Is that the right matchup? When you hear that matchup, or even when you saw it on SmackDown, when they announced it, when you're watching on covering SmackDown, what was your gut reaction to that match?
I think the crowd will pop the first couple times, maybe the first month or so. But if WWE books him like they've booked him in the past, I think he'll fall back into that rut really quickly, and that new car smell will wear off very quickly for fans for, you know, him being gone and returning. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an odd match, and I don't know why WWE chose Orton other than the fact that they wanted to get a match hyped, and this was the safe match.
Mm-hmm.
Win or lose, they could run Lesnar-Orton and make it work. You couldn't really run Lesnar-Reigns and make it work if Lesnar lost, I don't think. And if he won, it would have felt like, kind of like rushing into it. So this was kind of a hedging their bet match, Lesnar versus Orton. They've got a story to tell as far as those two breaking in at the same time, being in OVW at the same time. And I think Wade Keller on the, the Bruce Mitchell audio this weekend that he kind of laid out, good way to make Lesnar Orton feel like a big deal,
mm-hmm.
rather than just kind of have fans scratching their heads saying, huh? Lesnar Orton? Like,
why?
That doesn't make sense. And you figure they... It would have had to have been something that Lesnar, if they were going to announce it ahead of time, which they obviously wanted to do to get the plug on UFC, anybody they put Lesnar against would have been cold because Lesnar's been off TV for so long. You know, Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose are already tied up in the triple threat match, and they're three of the guys that would have made the most sense to face Lesnar, so they're immediately out.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the rest of the roster, you know, even a Kevin Owens, who a lot of people see that as a dream match, Owens versus Lesnar, even that would have been relatively cold with no hype. Same with Lesnar Cesaro. Would it have been 10 times more intriguing? Yeah. But it still would have felt like, huh, they're doing Lesnar Cesaro, or huh, they're doing Lesnar Owens. Well, it's exciting, but you almost feel like by doing it that way, there was a lot that they left on the table, a lot of buildup they could have done that they didn't. Whereas Lesnar-Orton, you can kind of throw that out there and say, well, yeah, it's a match you can sort of build SummerSlam around, but it's not a huge dream match, I don't think. It's a match people could look forward to, but it's not like WWE's throwing their money away by not doing Lesnar-Orton with more hype or with more background, like they would feel if they were doing Lesnar-Owens or Lesnar-Cesaro.
Yeah, and not that they would have done this, but... You know, even taking a risk on something like, and I say a risk because, you know, you're what I'm trying to say is, you like, if you named like Brock and Nakamura, or Brock and Joe, or Brock and Balor. You know, the risk is who the heck, you know, to you know, I don't know what percentage to put it on, but the mainstream audience, the mainstream WWE audience that doesn't follow NXT, isn't really aware of NXT, doesn't really know who the people are. You know, the risk is, like, who is this person? But if they did a really good job of introducing people and bringing people up to speed and allowing the excitement of, like, and oh my gosh, I can't believe they're actually doing Brock versus, you know, fill in the blank, Nakamura or Joe Ballard. Yeah, maybe the momentum of, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're actually going to do that match, would have carried and kind of swept over mainstream fans who aren't really aware of what's going on with NXT. And as you said, I think Brock's Orton was very safe. And I don't know that it's going to get a lot of, like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for this match. And so then you end up with, you know, which is better, the safe pick, that people know who that person is, or the risky pick, and maybe people don't know who they are right now, but they will in 2 months. And I think this was, you know, it's a very safe pick. It could be a good match. It could also be a bit of a clunker. You know, is Brock motivated? Does he want to be at SummerSlam? Or would he rather be preparing for a UFC return fight? Another fight, you know? You know, I don't know how...
Well, I don't think there's any doubt in the answer. There's no doubt in the answer to that, but can he at least act like he's interested? That's the key.
Can he sell interest in facing Mr. Orton? Yes. Can Paul Heyman convince him to be excited for this match? Yes. I'm really curious, you know, is Brock even going to be on TV that often, you know, or is this a match where you're better off really not having them on TV, you know?
And that's another reason you don't want to give away a big first-time matchup is you just, we're sitting here, we don't know how much hype is going to be put into this. Do you want to waste the first Lesnar-Nakamura, Lesnar-Owens match on a time where Lesnar's going to be on TV once or twice maybe for the build-up and that's it?
Mm. Yeah, and I think the less is the better with Orton and Brock. I think the more you put them on TV together, I think you're going to water it down really quickly. Just because Orton just, he's one of those characters where, as you said, the new car smell kind of wears off quickly. You know, you see it, you get it, and then the more you see it, you know, unless they have him in a really good program, I think it becomes less special. So I think especially when there's no real issue between them at the moment, I think this should be the Undertaker Triple H kind of booking, where it's, you know, very small, very few words, big moments, not a lot of time in the ring together before the match type situation.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I don't know. Maybe they have a really great story they have in mind. I have no idea, but we'll see. Greg, anything else from tonight's Raw that you feel worthy of? Additional discussion. I guess the Cena Styles stuff, you know, we didn't get a lot of talk about it. It was, you know, the crowd was hot for it. There was a Cena chant in Detroit for John Cena. I don't know what's going on with that, but
it must be really getting bad in Detroit.
I mean, to me, I don't know that Style. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't know that Cena actually needed to be on this show. You know, I think they could have gone a week where the club, like, really beat down Enzo and Cass with that 3-on-2, and then Cena makes a comeback next week. But then again, that would have reinforced the idea that Cena abandoned his friends and he.
Yeah,
you know,
that
he,
was the.
Yeah.
That was the story they were playing up. He had to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have made him too much of a, like, yeah, he actually is a bad friend. You know, and you don't want your top babyface to be in that position, but. If they could have done it differently, if they could have chose some different wording or presentation, I think they could have gotten away with a beat down on Enzo and Cass and had Cena make the comeback next week to where he didn't have to be there. But
sure.
You know, like you said, based on the way the wording they used, they had to have Cena make the comeback tonight. I just don't know if he needed to be there tonight, you know, other than that verbiage they used. But what do you make of Cena Styles right now? They're kind of in a holding pattern, you know, six-man tag at Battleground. You know, the rematch is not going to happen at the pay-per-view. What do you make of Cena and Styles at this point?
I like inserting Enzo and Cass into it. I like the fact that Cena now, because for so long it had been, you know, Cena was a bad friend. You know, nobody would come save him from attacks. He rarely saved baby faces from attacks. And that was a major talking point at times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see them put somebody with him. And have Enzo and Cass stand with him. I think those are two guys who are good to do that with too. And you know, the club is the club. You know, they're a workmanlike team. Styles, again, doing well on his promo and coming across much better as a heel. Coming across good enough as a heel to have fans in Detroit chant for John Cena. I think that's all that needs to be said about the effectiveness of AJ Styles and the club as heels.
Yeah, that's why I tweeted he's the MVP of 2016. You know, that plus the two really good main events with Roman Reigns, you know, on pay-per-view. So
I certainly can make that argument.
Yeah, he has done workmanlike, put forth workmanlike effort for WWE in his first half year.
Yeah,
here in 2016. So. Greg, that's I think those are the big topics from tonight's Raw. We're going to see a really interesting Raw next Monday. The last Raw before the brand split, WWE title match, will there be a new champion, all that good stuff. So you and I, we will reconvene on the 25th of July and the first Raw of a new era. And Pat McNeil and I will do, of course, next Monday, the last Raw before the new era. So, Greg, 2 weeks, we'll have a totally new Raw to discuss. I look forward to it. We will break it all down then. Give us a little VIP talk, Greg, of your latest Torch newsletter column and what you have coming up this summer.
Latest Torch newsletter column. I talked about. I basically looked at the Brock Lesnar match from all angles. That's in the newsletter that's out now. Before the match came out, like, you know, as far as WWE's hand in it and their hype or lack thereof of it. And I also talked about Roman Reigns and the possibilities there of his comeback and how WWE can portray him coming back as well. So I took on those two. And then in the newsletter that's coming up that will be released this week, my full report from NXT Venice.
That's right.
This past Friday night I attended, so... That was a really cool show, and I'll have my full extended thoughts in that column coming up.
Speaking of Nakamura, you got the Nakamura experience live in person. Yeah.
I was surprised. I did not expect that.
Yeah. You never know who's going to show up at an NXT live show.
Yeah, I didn't go in looking at any of the advertising, so I didn't see who was advertised, and I remember the last time I was there in January – it was a split show, so they had the Florida show, and then they had one, I think, in Nashville.
Okay.
And we got the very bare bones, I think.
Much different.
Asuka was the biggest star we had on that show. And so I didn't – I guess I was expecting still something along those lines that night, Friday night. So when I got Nakamura, when I got Aries and Joe in the main event, when you got some bigger names, it was a pleasant surprise.
There you go. Yeah, that's what they're trying. I think they're trying to do that is make the Florida shows a little bit bigger, especially when they're not running a road show that weekend. You know, they're not in another town or another state. Yeah. So they're trying to reward the Florida fans, you know, with some big shows or at least some big stars. So, Greg, you got the Nakamura experience before I do. NXT is coming here on Houston on July 30th. I'll be there on the front row. And I certainly anticipate the Nakamura experience with full photos and videos. So.
Oh, so I just beat you by a few weeks then. I kind of feel bad about that.
Darn you, Greg. Darn you. Why couldn't have been here June 30th? Yeah, you know, I could have beat you by 2 weeks. But I defer
always,
to you.
I always have that over you. Yeah.
I defer to you, oh, great Greg. You have... You have experienced it before I have, so that's a feather in your cap. I look forward to your column. I always enjoy your column on the live experience.
Okay, good.
So I definitely look forward to that. And the next Torch newsletter, of course, available for VIP members, pwtorch.com/govip if you're not a VIP member. And that'll do it for us on tonight's show. Greg, appreciate you hanging out with me for the full show. And again, Tuesday live cast, Wade Keller, Sean Radican at 1 Eastern. Pat McNeil's special draft on Wednesday at 5:30 Eastern, and then we'll wrap it up again later on the week here at pwtorchlivecast.com. So on behalf of Torch columnist Greg Parks, with Kids on Bridges playing us out, this is Torch assistant editor James Caldwell signing off for the livecast.